And to me, that success came from external
salary, sources. Money,
yeah. Salary, yeah, position, prominence. And to this little, you know, McConaughey-esque East Texas town,
yeah, I get it.
You just want to make your hometown proud and your ex is jealous. Right? Like, don't lie to yourself. That's, oh my God. That's all
we
want.
That's the truest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Okay, Erin, I want to jump right into it. I did a deep dive on your LinkedIn. I kind of know your whole background, but I just want to hear it in your words. So kind of start us off at college and kind of take us through your career progression.
Yeah, start off at college. I'll go back just a step so from small town East Texas called Longview. It's outside of Tyler. And I like everybody to picture how I was brought up because it's the hometown of Matthew McConaughey. So really? It's where Mr. McConaughey went to high school. We went to rival high schools. So it just gives you a picture of kind of where I came from. I go to Texas A&M for undergrad, business major, focus on marketing. From there, I go to Wells Fargo for a couple of years and just a entry-level consumer lending job. From there, I go to law school, SMU Law School. Met my husband there along the way, and I come out and I go straight to what we call big law. Go to a big law firm here in town, Haynes and Boone, and become a finance attorney. And that was 17 short years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there's all of these different types of attorneys. What does that really mean? What do you do?
Yeah. What did you do
for them?
Day?
Yeah. What do you do all day?
It's funny because there's this recurring theme among my new clients, and I'll get to why they're new, right? I started my own law firm. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But there's this recurring theme of, why is everything so damn expensive? Why is this legal fee 6 figures? Why, I mean, it's really tough to justify sometimes. So I've done a lot lately of, what do you do here? Like that old, what is it, Office Space? The Teds come in, they're doing a consulting gig, right? Have you seen this movie?
No, I have not, but I'm
it's
following.
Like a cult classic, yeah. And the consultants come in and they go, what exactly is it you do here? And you'd be amazed if people are like, I don't really know. So I'm constantly having to justify my existence, as all service providers do, right? So corporate finance, it's you could be a corporate attorney, you could be a real estate attorney, finance. This is all on transactional side, right? So the two big types of law of practice that we know are transactional and then litigation. So transactional is very document intensive. It's your deals, like you hear about M&A, which stands for mergers and acquisitions, your M&A deals, securities, lawyers, private equity, debt financing, private credit, real estate. These are all transactional. Compare that to what my husband does, which is litigation. He'll actually see the inside of a courtroom.
Okay.
And I will not unless I'm fighting a traffic ticket because I'll be damned if that speed limit was posted.
That's funny.
So he does like motions and, you know, real lawyer stuff, the stuff you see on TV. Exactly. Alec McBeal, Boston Legal, suits. Right? Yeah. So I do transactional law, which is, I think it's way better. It's more predictable. It's better lifestyle-wise, generally speaking. But it just means we're putting, let's just call it the deal. We're putting the whole deal together on paper. Mm-hmm. If Moss wants to buy company ABC, you're going to have a purchase agreement. You're going to have maybe a merger agreement if it's a merger, not an acquisition. You might have, how are you going to pay for this? You need $1 billion line of credit. So now you have finance documents involved. You have tons of diligence. So you have to go look at all your stuff. What do you have? What does company ABC have? What are you going to have at the end of the deal? So you can see that usually at this point, people's eyes start glazing over and they're like, this is why we hire attorneys.
Yep.
We just want you to get the deal done.
Yep.
We don't really care how it happens until the bill is presented,
yes.
Until the legal fees. So corporate finance for me specifically, the best way to describe it is just lenders and borrowers doing a deal. So that could be you started a company and you need to borrow a credit facility. It could be from a bank, a huge institution. Let's call it Bank of America. Let's call it Truist. You need to borrow a big chunk of money. What are you going to do with it? How is it secured? Is it secured by real estate? Is it an all assets collateral? And so on. So people facilitating deals is what transactional attorneys do.
Okay.
Is that helpful? Clear as mud?
No, absolutely. Well, yeah, we're in the middle of a couple of different deals like that. So I'm like totally in. I would jump into what all of these different terms I'm hearing is, but I'm not going to bore anybody with
this. It's like security. There's so much to it, and there's so much to our practice that isn't appreciated But that's okay.
There's like, a lot to it.
We need to make it look easy, right? Until somebody's displeased with how much that service costs. And so then you feel like you have to go back and really justify. Can I jump into what I'm doing now?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Go for it.
So I did, again, the gift of gab. You're going to have just like a sign that says stop. Just stop. Like Wile E. Coyote. That's what I just pictured. Like, yeah. Do not pass go. So I'm at Haynes and Boone for 13 years. Okay. Make partner along the way. Great firm. Still thick as thieves with my practice, my partners for my practice group. We travel together. But I'm there for 13 years. Then I go to another firm for about 3 years, partner there. And then I go to another firm and I have this great job. They're, you know, lure you over with tons of money.
Oh,
and
yeah.
All the flashy things, ivory tower. And I was there for about a year. And I'll spare you the details, but the majority of my practice group got let go. And so in a matter of 12 months, I'm, you know, top of the world. Like, look how important I am. They're paying me so much money to, oh, we're going to have to show you the door.
Oh, wow.
So that led to, and we all retreated very well. Got, you know, retreated well. Had a good runway. But in that time, in that, let's call it 5-6 months, it was, do I go back to big law? That's the easy answer. Do I do consulting? Do I do recruiting? Do I do academia? I looked at working at SMU Law.
Really?
I still love to do that. Do I go be an executive coach? You know, there's so many things.
Yeah.
I couldn't find what I wanted to be when I grew up.
Yeah.
And I would go on these interviews at other big law firms. They shall remain nameless. and they talk about the exact thing I've done for 16 years, just with a different view out the window. Same clients, same work, same construct.
Mm.
And I remember I would get in my car in the parking garage and I would just cry. And I'm not a crier.
Yeah.
I'm on way too much Lexapro for that. and it would just, like, it's your body's reaction, like red alert, you know, do not do this.
Yeah.
And I've never had a gut feeling. I always think it's paranoia when people say that. I'm like, what's a gut feeling? But that was the closest I've come to having some sort of intuition, gut feeling, whatever you want to call it, and then just say, you just can't keep going down. It's like just digging the ditch. What is the saying? If you want to get out of the hole, you got to quit digging.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it was a lot of conversations with my husband, who's also an attorney, right? So a lot of planning, strategic planning for our, you know, how much debt do we have? We paid off all of our debt. We just got in a really good situation. We have 8-year-old daughter, so there's always that to contend for.
Yeah.
And I just started doing work for old clients. One client in particular, she's a general counsel.
Okay.
She's a dear friend of mine. Her name's also Erin. General counsel of a company here in town. She calls me, I guess that's April. So we're January through April. And mind you, in those 4 months, I went to Mexico City. I went to Palm Springs.
Yes. So you're living the life.
Hawaii. Like, it was nice.
That's fun.
But then you just realize, like, ah, shit, we got to pay the mortgage.
Yeah.
Okay. So back to real life, yes. And so Erin calls me and she just says, you know, can you do this deal? You've done it 3 times over. It's the same deal.
Okay.
She had been a loyal client from 3 firms in a row. Every time I moved, she'd come with me. And I was like, well, no, you got to call a lawyer.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I fixed it, you know, done with the text, go on to something else. And she's like, Erin, can you do this deal? I'm like, oh, man, I can do this deal. So it's funny how quickly, if you already have the skill set, it's like the same brain. I knew how to do it.
Yeah.
In a matter of days, I had, you know, a website, an email.
Man.
You hang your own shingle, so to speak.
Yeah.
I formed a PLLC. It's like one document.
Yeah.
And the thing that took the longest was getting professional liability insurance.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, you can mimic credibility, right?
Yeah.
Really easily. And so that's what I'm doing now. So that's what I'll call my day job is practicing law, but in a solo firm.
That's amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
So you really didn't think, you know, as you're kind of interviewing, I'll just do this on my own. It really just kind of happenstance happened to you.
Didn't even occur to me. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm sure we all have an example of that, of it's right in front of you.
Yeah.
But it didn't even, I have them probably every, you know, once a week. I'm like, oh yeah, that's so obvious. But you're in it, you know, like you're too close to it.
Of course, yeah.
Like when they say the best ideas come in the shower, when you're driving, you're just kind of aimlessly looking out. And it just, I don't know. I never thought of it. I'm very risk averse. I'm very, you know, we'll talk about in background later, yeah. but very, you know, modest upbringing and always wanted to have that success, capital S success.
Of course.
And to me, that success came from external
mm-hmm. salary, sources. Money, yeah.
salary, yeah, position, prominence. And to this little, you know, McConaughey-esque East Texas town,
yeah. I get it.
You just want to make your hometown proud and your ex is jealous. Right? Like, don't lie to yourself. That's, oh my gosh. That's all we want.
That's the truest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. I love that. That was great.
And so I felt like, check, 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 check. Got it. Got a great husband. Got a great daughter. Great job. Great house. Beautiful house. Just, you know, all signs point to success. And so I didn't think about what if it was me that was responsible for bringing, like, actually bringing in the work. What if it was me that was the giver of those accolades,
yeah,
right? Like, we all, I think women in particular, we are very, we don't want to disappoint people. We're very hesitant to disappoint others.
Okay.
And so,
which leads us to being risk averse.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And so I was worried that it would disappoint my mom. You know, she knows what I used to make at these ivory tower firms.
Oh yeah.
And she's like, what are you doing? Right. So I didn't want to disappoint anyone. And the clip, the pace that I was at was just, you know, all signs point up and to the right.
Yeah.
And I felt like stopping that, you know, that progress was just almost like giving up
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah.
But now, fast forward to now, and it's I'm really glad I made that decision.
So explain kind of the difference in quality of life, like at the big firm. Like, is it, you know, what you see on TV? I mean, I know accountant, I hear more about, you know, CPAs still working the 80-hour weeks, and like yeah. firms will boast when they get them down to 60 hours. But tell me about the difference in your quality of life working for yourself versus those big corporate firms.
I just like can't stifle my laughter right now. Like, it's just so different. And I don't ever want to speak ill of big law. I mean, it literally, it changed the complete trajectory of my life. I remember where I was when I got my offer, my verbal offer as a summer associate from Haynes and Boone in 2007. And I mean, it just changed my whole life.
Right.
The thing about big law or law firms in general is we don't make widgets. We don't make anything.
Okay.
We make billable hours. Mm. And you are compensated based on how many billable hours. Does everybody know what billable hours
sure.
is?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, okay, so you're compensated on that. Your salary is conducted on that. How well your performance review. It's all about your billable hours. Of course, the quality of your work, of course. Like, that's just a North Starter.
Right.
But let's just assume all things being equal, he who bills more makes more.
Got it.
And so it's not just billing. It's billing, collecting, right? Make sure you get 100% of your collections. And what happens is that the standard now is 2,000 hours a year, 2,000 billable hours, closed, recorded, collected.
Okay.
If you break that down, take out 2 weeks for vacation, which nobody takes, it's 40 hours a week.
Okay.
So that's 40 yeah. hours a week collected. So that doesn't mean, let's just say it's 8 hours every five-day week. That's not practice group meetings, attorney meetings, women attorney meetings. Oh, you're real bubbly, so you should be the hiring partner.
Oh,
recruiting
goodness.
Meetings. Diversity, equity, and inclusion committee meetings. finance meetings, finance partner meetings, all finance partner meetings. Oh, Dallas meetings. You get the
no
gist.
Way. So you're not compensated for any
when
of that other stuff.
When do you practice?
Oh my
so
goodness.
When do, and I loved all the extra stuff. I loved being a mentor to other women. I was mentored by so many great attorneys, female and male. But all that extra stuff, you ain't paid for.
Wow.
But it's expected.
Wow.
So I know I'm kind of on a soapbox, but listen, my soapboxes have soapboxes. Like, to me, and I know I'm not going to make any friends, but it's hypocritical in that they're expecting both, but you're only compensated based on one. So if you don't do the non-billable stuff, they're not going to fire you. But if you don't do the billable stuff, they're going to fire you.
Okay.
But they only pay you for the, like, it's just, but both are expected. It's very... It's complicated. And so if you think about billing hours, I just want y'all to just take an hour of your day, 2 hours of your day. Every 6 minutes has to be accounted for. So 6 minute increments. So 0.1 hours.
It's wild.
So this podcast, let's say it's 1.2 hours.
I spent that long at the coffee machine at least three or four times today.
Yeah. So how do you, so you can see how it bleeds over into home life.
Right.
Into weekends, into 3 a.m. phone calls. So that's part of the problem. And the other, and so I'll contrast that with now. Like I just have so much more time to do the work because I don't have all the extraneous
stuff.
Got
it. That makes sense.
Like now it's just all billable and I'm flat fee. So yeah. I'm only project-based billing. So I don't bill hours. Hope to never do it again in my life.
Okay.
You have kids.
Yeah.
Right? So my aha moment, I was sitting upstairs. We have a little TV room upstairs and we were watching TV together. My daughter, Alex, she was probably six at the time. Out loud, like audibly to no one in particular, I say, watch Bluey with Alex 0.3 hours. Like that's messed up.
No.
Like I was.
No, you didn't.
I am choosing. I'm identifying my value, my worth with Bill. It's so. Oh. It might just be my personality type too.
Yeah.
Super type A, super OCD. My husband says I put the letters in order, so I call it CDO. Thank you. So I just, it's not conducive to my personality type, and some people just tolerate it better for sure. And you're expected to close your hours, you know, every week, at least every day is ideal. So it's just a lot.
That's insane.
So it's the expectation. And the other part of it is they're paying attorneys. And I'm going to speak to big law because that's just the only experience I have.
Yeah.
They're paying big law attorneys so much money that the expectation is coming from two places. So it's coming externally from the clients because they go, you're charging me $1,200 an hour.
Yeah.
Do you know what I expect for a 40-year-old charging me $1,200 an hour? Mm-hmm. Some places, Kirkland and Ellis, they're infamous. You can look it up. It's okay. They'll just cry into their piles of money. First-year associates, almost $1,000. That is 1 year out of law school.
Really?
These kids could be 25 years old if you go straight through. So the expectation from your clients when they're paying that much of a premium, it's unmeetable. So you've got external. And then you've got internal going, well, this practice group, I hired six first-year associates, and I have to show that it was worth that. So I have to get this number of hours from you. And they're like, well, I don't have the work. Well, I have to get this number of hours to you. And to me, it's a little wink, wink, nod, nod. I have to get this number of hours from you.
You have to show me somewhere.
I think there's just an incentive to get the hours. We'll just say that.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just, well,
so, okay. So I get why you don't go back. I'm following you now.
Is that clear enough?
Yeah. I got it. So, but you're doing this, you're starting, you know, your own deal with law. And then out of nowhere, you start this whole other business that I've talked to you about a little bit before, but it's just this crazy idea. Because when you first said it to me, it just seemed like, this should already be a thing. So tell me about your vision and what you're doing with Diaper Concierge.
Yes. Okay. So Diaper Concierge, and I say the hard G because I'm from East Texas, but I do think it's Diaper Concierge. I think it's a French term. I got to work on the name.
That's funny.
I wanted Diaper Duty, but that's taken because you have to trademark everything.
Oh,
you know?
Of course.
I thought Diaper Duty would be cute. Even if
it would be cute.
Like duty. Like D-O-O-D-I.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, we're workshopping it.
Yeah. Okay. That's great.
So I'm in like the prime of my legal career by all... Everyone is looking in and would be like, you're in the prime of it. You are, I'm a rising seventh year. I'm up for partner in the next year or two. I've just had my first child, you know, a first time mom maternity leave with her great maternity leave. That's the one good thing, you know,
okay.
A lot
well,
of good things.
At least they have that.
Benefits are good if you take advantage of them. And I'm on maternity leave with Alex and she's 3-4 months old. And I really had a hard time with motherhood. The first few months were just awful. I didn't want to do it. I didn't know how to do it. It was something I was not good at, which you're not used to being bad at things if you're a high achiever. And I just didn't know how to do it. So I constantly felt like I was a failure because we would be out and about, we'd be at restaurants, we'd be at the mall, at Target, always at Target.
Yeah.
And it'd be time for a diaper change, and inevitably I didn't bring enough diapers. It's size 2 and she's in size 3 now.
Yep.
The wipes are all dried out because somebody left them open, right? Wouldn't me. Justin. No, something would go wrong and I'm ill-prepared. And I'm not a person that's usually ill-prepared.
Right.
And so that made me feel bad about myself. And I remember just one time in particular, we're at the Snuffers here in Addison. Mm-hmm. We're Snuffers, me, Justin, and Alex. And it's time for diaper change. I go in the bathroom. We're doing the whole thing. I mean, at least they had a diaper changing table.
There you go.
Don't get me started on that. Yeah. Another soapbox for another day. But I'm rummaging around the diaper bag, and I come up empty. And we're sitting there. It's a code brown, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's got shit up to their elbows. And I look over at the freaking tampon machine, right? The quarters only. It's got dust on it.
Yeah.
No one ever uses that.
No, never.
Do you have quarters?
No.
Do you have a quarter on you?
No.
I'm more likely to have like a blue, you know, monkey on me than a quarter. And I look over and I'm like, damn it. Just like, you're just so mad in that moment, like of all things.
Of course.
You know, and then it says it, that's my aha moment. But after that, it's just, I continue to get frustrated, continue to get really angry thinking about like how much moms are overlooked.
Yeah.
Like, I can get a whole thing of makeup from a vending machine, that Benefit Cosmetics truck.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it.
I can get $250 Bose headphones. I can get an iPhone. I can get I can get Legos. But I can't get a necessity, like a literal necessity, like a diaper.
It's wild.
And so what, you know, they say, what is it? Necessity is the mother of invention.
Mm-hmm.
So just Googled and looked around and really, like you said, how does this not exist?
Yeah.
So I feel like I've buried the lead, but Diaper Concierge is a company. So we install diaper vending machines in public venues.
Okay.
So we started out in restrooms, which is just an easier path really to get on the walls of restrooms than like main walls of giant, you know, airports, amusement parks, sports stadiums. So that's how it started out. And I have it right there. It's wall mounted, it's digital, it's super sleek, it's small. But we sell diapers, wet wipes, backup onesies,
that's awesome.
Hand sanitizer, 2 ounce bottles of formula. And so on.
That's great. Yeah. I didn't know you had the formula too.
Genius. We've added that. That's been a big one. We're very responsive to like inbound customer requests.
Yeah.
And they'll say like, love this, had an emergency. You know, can you consider adding onesies?
That's great.
Oh, for sure.
I love that.
Because people, you know, airports were our first big contracts, and we have them in the restroom right next to the changing table, like where the action happens. You can't just run over to Hudson News.
Yeah.
You can't just, I mean, if they're open and they have like a size 4 and you have to buy 20 of them.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, you know, behind the condoms. Like, you have to search for it. Like, it's just not, it's not an adequate accommodation.
Definitely not.
So that's how it was born.
That's crazy.
And it was that year when I was up for partner. So I made partner, had a baby, and we built our house all in the same 18 months.
Wow.
It was very stressful.
Yeah, that sounds stressful.
Yeah.
But tell me about... Like, I think I follow Diaper Concierge on Instagram, and I saw that you recently got a huge contract maybe in Arkansas.
Yes.
So tell me how it's been knocking on doors trying to convince people that they even need this.
Oh, my God. Trying to convince the middle-aged white male that he needs some diapers?
Yeah.
It ain't easy. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. So Arkansas, XNA is now the biggest airport, the busiest airport in Arkansas. So Northwest Arkansas National Airport, that's our first outside of Texas contract.
Okay, great.
So very big deal. And then I can announce it today because yesterday was opening day at Globe Life Field. So we're at the Texas Rangers. I still call it the ballpark in Arlington.
That's amazing.
Isn't that great?
Yeah,
thank you.
That's great.
I worked on that for 3 years.
Okay.
3 years. You talk about the hustle, knocking on doors. 1,000 no's leads to 1 maybe. You cannot offend easily, to be successful. I know you didn't ask, but again, 2 shots of espresso. you just can't be a wallflower. You can't be, can't get discouraged easily, I think.
But yeah, you have to a little bit, right? Like, I mean, I would go through this. This is why I don't have some super successful business completely on my own. Like, this is what I don't have as an entrepreneur. I just don't have the ability to just get told no multiple times. Like, that I can't, like, Garrett tells me no all the time, and that's fine. But like, an outside person that I don't know just like openly rejecting an idea that I have that I feel is personally genius, that would just kill me.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to disappoint people. I don't want people to not like me. Like, how did you get past it? How did you beat these people down at Globe Life for 3 years until you finally got in?
DFW Airport, from the day I had the first like meaningful conversation, like you get to the right person, to installation was 27 months. Like, it is just not.
How do you work on something for 27 months?
And that's like, why you can't quit your day job.
Yeah.
Right.
That's true.
That, I think, to your point, if it was my only kind of job where I was getting validation, where I was getting that capital S success, I think it would beat me down.
This is good.
I think because I know that lawyering is for, you know, making money.
Yeah.
And Diaper Concierge is for
Doing good.
Making a difference.
Yes.
Yeah. That's cute. That's corny, but that's cute.
No, that's good. I love that.
So I think, and I do, it's almost worse when you're not just trying to make money, because everybody gets that. You're like, oh, you're revenue producing. You're selling widgets. You're trying to sell as many widgets as you possibly can, as quick as you can. This is more, I want the big fish, the giant airports, the big stadiums. I want to have the biggest impact we can until we're everywhere, until we're in every Chick-fil-A and every Target. But I need the big ones. And so to have that, it's just resilience. It's grit. It's determination. It's really, really believing in it. But to your point, like having to say with a straight face, you have a problem here, Mr. Executive at the airport, and that offends them. Mm-hmm. So now they're on the defense.
Oh, yeah.
Now they'll say, oh, my God, I hear shit like, oh, well, nobody's ever asked me for a diaper.
That's funny.
So we must not have a diaper problem.
Yeah.
I'm like, what do you, it's just.
Why are they going to ask you for a diaper? They know you don't have one.
I don't even want to give like credit to the question. I just go, can I talk to somebody else? this is not going to end well. Like, just give me a mom, give me a woman. I don't, but it's really hard. You have to make the business case for them is what I found. So I've learned a lot. Like I'm talking like I know exactly what I'm doing now, but it's doing the wrong thing for so long.
Oh, yeah.
And we're just in year four. You know, went from zero to 17 machines in 4 years in two states, about to do Oklahoma too.
How many total machines?
17.
17 total machines.
Yeah. Okay. And it, you know, the big, like Love Field, DFW. We have installation at SMU, Ford Stadium, Globe Life.
Okay, that's cool. That's good.
Big ones, right? Yeah. Comerica Center. Again, I want that big exposure. Oh, Houston Hobby. Oh my gosh, can't believe I forgot that.
What's that?
Houston Hobby is the regional airport in Houston.
Oh, okay. So that's great.
There's IAH International and a Houston Hobby, kind of like our Love Field.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. And so I found when I'm talking to, you know, stereotypical airport executive, middle-aged male, you have to say, okay, if these people leave Globe Life Field, so do their wallets.
Mm.
If they don't get their issue resolved, they're out of there. And then so is the revenue.
Because you share it, because some part of your revenue is shared with the business that you're in.
Ugh, unfortunately.
That's how all vending machines work, though, right?
You have it's a percentage of your revenue.
Yeah, that's why they're even open to you putting it there.
Yep.
Okay.
And so I thought, I was like, this is going to be, you know, I think it's something that should exist, should have existed forever. It's so just obvious, the need for it and how it's going to make passengers, patrons, everybody so much happier and more like you're taken care of. Like, oh, somebody recognizes the need. Like, doesn't that endear you to the
absolutely.
Place? So I thought I was going to walk in these airports and people were going to be just like clamoring. Like, I'll take 100. I'll take 50. And, you know, I'd have to quit my job because we're working on manufacturing them. And this it's just going to be so great. Like, we better get ready, right? Better get a storage warehouse.
Funny. Yeah.
And then this happens. You tell me. I walk in and I say, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Executive, I'm going to come with a turnkey solution, to your problem. I'm going to walk in. I'm going to install it. I'm going to, with my, you know, bonded, insured electricians. You can pick yours. That's fine. Yep. They'll be badged and security cleared. I'm going to install it. I'm going to maintain it. I'm going to replenish it because I do everything remotely. It's all, you know, cloud-based inventory system. Also, you're going to get some of my money. You're going to get a cut of the revenue.
Yep.
Also, your passengers are helpful, are going to feel very helped. Also, you're going to get a big PR boon. Like this is, it makes all the news.
It's a big deal.
Instagram. You know, and they go, I don't know. Like what is
wild.
The reservation? It's really hard. If I thought it was, you know, I'm trying to sell you a perfume and you just don't like how it smells.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
But when you objectively make the case for it, that's where if you get, you know, if your feelings get hurt when you're told, that's where I'm just like, it's not even my feelings. Like, I think you guys are dumb.
I have to ask a question. Nobody's going to love this question. And I swear this is not an I Hate Men podcast. It's really not. Mm-hmm. Like, they make the world go round just like everybody else does. But like how many of those meetings were with men versus women? I mean, because I feel like women would see the advantage, because I know personally there have been multiple times, and you know, it's been 10 years since Emily was a baby, but I remember those times when I didn't have a diaper. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's not really grace, and this is bad, I'm about to say this out loud, but Gray doesn't feel guilty that we don't have a diaper. I feel guilty that we don't have a diaper. It was my job to pack the diaper bag.
My failure.
My failure.
Mom's failure.
Mom's failure, not dad's failure. Mm-hmm. So how different does the pitch go when you're talking to a woman versus a versus a man.
Let me tell you one story and then I'll answer the question more directly. Our first, I can't even say the name. I'll tell you later. Their first is one of our first big venues, and the meeting, we had signed the contract. We knew the quantity. We knew the number of units you're going to install, and then we're getting to placement.
Yeah.
And I said, well, let's do two women's restrooms and two men's restrooms. Why would you put them in the men's restroom? With a straight face, he says that. Like he meant it. Like it was a real question.
Yeah.
And that's when
No, it was. It was a real question.
And I'm so... you know, I know my bargaining position.
Yeah.
I have none.
Yeah.
I have none. I need their walls more than they need me.
Yes.
And so instead of saying, bless your heart.
Yeah.
Which we know that that means the Southern, you know what.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, well, you know, our research actually indicates that, you know, nowadays the modern man is actually changing diapers and all that. And we got down to three in the women's and one in the men's.
Okay.
And I'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take it too.
And our biggest seller out of the men's restroom is wet wipes.
I know you told me that.
They're not flushable.
They're not flushable? Oh.
It's supposed to be a baby wipe.
Oh, no. Okay. But I believe all of that. I believe all of that. That's so wild. That whole thing is so wild to me. Okay. I love this business so much. I agree. Like when you first told me this, if I had been you, I would have also started buying warehouse space. Like you just immediately think that this whole idea. I mean, I wonder if that's a little bit of every entrepreneur's thought. Like they live in this daydream where they're like, this is going to blow up.
I call it a delusional sense of self-confidence.
Yes.
And I think it's like entrepreneurs and world leaders. You have to be just delusionally believe in the success of it.
Yeah.
Or I would have quit. Or if we had 100,000 machines, I mean, I'd have to take investors. So it's me, myself, and I, mm-hmm. right? I've got contractors that help me replenish the machine. My mother-in-law has our Frisco territory.
Oh, really? That's cute. Yes. I love that. That's a great idea.
She does Comerica Center in Kazania. I hit the in-law jackpot. I would, you know, so no outside investors, no debt, none of that. But I would love to have an investor like a Kimberly Clark or a Procter & Gamble.
Oh, my God,
like
yes.
a strategic partner. Yes. We could use all of their products. I don't know what made me think about that. But yes, the delusional sense of confidence that it's going to work. But if this was my only job, again, I would have been so deterred a long time ago. I would have been, you know, I'm not making money fast enough. And that's why it's some statistic, you know, it changes year to year. But it's something wild, like 95% of all entrepreneurs fail. Mm-hmm. I'm using fails in air quotes, like stop, stop proceeding within 5 years.
Yeah.
So we hear startup and I think, oh, startup, that's like less than a year. Like, no, Uber's a startup.
Yeah.
Like, they've never
Moss Utilities is a startup. We are still in the startup world.
Right.
I mean, we started 2017, so we still are very much a startup.
Yeah. So I think people don't, in general, I know you didn't ask, but I'll, you know, unsolicited advice all day long. But if people are looking to do it.
Yeah.
You have to keep swimming, right? For like, just keep swimming from Dory. Yeah. You just, something, one little thing every single day, and just have to, let's just believe in it so much that if it doesn't work, I would be so upset. Like if I get hit by a car on the way home, if Justin doesn't continue diaper concierge, like if it doesn't, it has to be a thing. And it is a thing. It just needs to be much more widespread.
How do you, and you're a lawyer, you know this, how do you keep other people from taking this idea and somebody with a connection to Johnson & Johnson or Procter & Gamble and just like being like, okay, she's got it to here, but I'm about to make it blow up. Like, how do you, you keep that from happening?
You can't. To every Uber, there's a Lyft.
Right.
For every McDonald's, there's a Burger King. So we're patent pending.
Okay.
We've got a great, patent attorney, but it's questionable, right? The patent process is like 3+ years long.
Mm.
It's questionable as to whether it's even patentable. And part of me is like, thank God if somebody else does it, because that's helping so many other parents.
But that's cool. That's a good way of thinking.
Isn't that cool? Like maybe I actually am a good person. I don't know. But the other part of me is
until they completely take over and you're like,
are
you kidding me?
Oh, no, girl. What, I love the irony that's probably going to be some middle-aged white man.
Yeah, no, I already knew that. Like the third time you said that, I was like,
that's who's going to get it.
Yeah, somebody's going to
Because there are, I will say, there are there are competitors, right? There's vending machines that sell everything. So there's big vending machines that have diapers and a lot of other kind of on-the-go baby products. We're just so distinguishable because we're on the walls, we're sleek, we're small, we're cashless, and we also sell advertising. So that's a big part of our revenue. Cool. I don't know if I told you this part. The diapers and wipes and we put tampons in because the flight attendants at American demanded it.
Okay, that's cool.
And I sell like 50 a week. Really? It's crazy. Hmm. It just shows you how much of a need there is. Again, women are overlooked. Whatever, it's fine.
Yeah.
We're all fine. It's fine. But there are competitors in that sense. There are the big Coke machines. But what I've tapped into is we can have sponsors, advertisers. Think a big children's hospital system. Think about a big, you know, Procter & Gamble. Mm-hmm. Think about a pediatrician. Anyone who wants to advertise on our machine.
Yeah.
So now the real revenue comes from digital out-of-home advertising.
Man, that's great.
So we're a billboard in the bathroom.
Yeah.
But not like a seedy one.
Yeah.
Right? Like you actually want to see this one.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
So I'd love to give the products away for free.
Yeah.
Like in the right sponsorships, we've done this before.
Okay.
You give the products away for free. They're all sponsored by your marquee sponsor.
Okay.
And then the whole screen can be like a movie poster size digital billboard.
Okay.
So it's really
that's
cool.
Why we talked about Ronald McDonald. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yes.
Love that.
And I saw you had Jill.
I did have Jill on the podcast.
I need
she's
to go
fantastic.
Listen to that one.
Yep. She's great.
Yeah.
Okay. So you are, you know, very active in just being a huge advocate for women in law and business. You have the gift of gab, so you mm-hmm. speak at a lot of events. What do you see? You know, it's 2025. Women are, you know, have done a lot in the last 10 years. What do you think are still the big barriers of entry for women to be, you know, C-level or be partnered a law firm? What are you seeing right now?
Yeah. I'll just speak to my own experience, right? And then what I perceive as issues that are still going on, you know, even though I jump ship. One of the biggest things is trying to fit round peg in square hole.
Mm-hmm.
So your life, you know, partner, white shoe, ivory tower firm, is not conducive to my life as a mom. And a lot of, you don't have to be a mom, you don't have to be a parent, but a lot of times the issues that we're talking about with, you know, flexibility and remote schedule, that's due to being the primary caregiver.
Right.
So let's just assume as a baseline, we're talking about women with school-age children. So kids that are under 18 still living at home. Mm-hmm. You cannot pretend that they're the same as you. And I think that's what we've gotten, what's gotten us into trouble. We talk about equality
yep.
and equity, and we're all the same, we're all the same. We're not the same.
Yeah.
I think ignoring that is a big part of the systemic problem.
Sure.
Specifically, I think, and I had a trouble issues with this too. Again, it goes along with women don't want to disappoint people. We don't necessarily think that we have the permission to ask for exactly what we want. So you've heard the saying, like, don't ask, don't get.
Sure.
If someone had never asked for a part-time schedule, they would have never gotten it. Like no one's, I try to tell the women that I mentor, no one is sitting around thinking, man, you know, how's Erin's mental health? Does she need more flexibility? Does she need one day at home to schedule doctor's appointments each week? What does she need from me?
Yeah.
They're not. But that doesn't mean they're not willing to give it. So we have to be so specific in our ask. And in my experience, again, with diaper concierge, with whatever it is, with asking for a sponsor, asking to, you know, somebody to sponsor a table at an event, whatever it is, in general, people want to help. I'm a Pollyanna. Yep. I think people are good.
Yep.
Inherently good. They want to help, but they are so effing busy with their life, with their everything, they got in a fight with their spouse on the way to work this morning. Their kids not getting into the college they want to get into. Like they have so much going on. It's like fatigue for one more decision. So if you are direct and you say, this is what I need. I need to leave here at 3 o'clock without anyone rolling their eyes at me. And I need you to know that I'm going to be back online at 5 o'clock and I'm still going to get my 8 hours billed or whatever it is. That's what I need. Can you do it? I'm hopeful that 10 out of 10 people would say yes. There are certainly constructs where it doesn't work. But if I had to say one thing that could help the situation, it's identifying what you specifically need and then asking for it.
Mm, that's good. Because I feel, so I mostly manage women, which is just kind of how it ended up. I don't have a lot of men on my team. And
I, you know, will sometimes be really demanding on a particular employee because she's high up and, you know, she has three kids. She has a demanding life. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I have to walk away and ask myself, what am I not providing her? Like, because I don't come to her and say, do you, I mean, and I have now that I'm hard on myself about it, but I think part of the problem is also the leaders, male, female, it doesn't matter. At what point is it also their responsibility to see somebody struggling and offer a solution?
Yeah.
Like it's two-sided.
It's two-sided for sure. I will put the onus more on the individual that needs the accommodation. Good.
I like that.
I do.
That's good. Because people won't ask. They really won't.
Yeah, they should. It's fear, right?
Yeah.
The fear of disappointment, fear that they're going to replace me with somebody who doesn't need these accommodations, mm-hmm. somebody that doesn't need a flexible work schedule, somebody that doesn't need whatever it is. I think we're just all asking to be treated more like adults.
Yeah.
Like I look back now and think of the things that, you know, I'd put on my calendar, meeting with executive coach, whatever, just lie about it. And I'm, you know, going to the OB-GYN. Like you're going to get your kid from school. There's a dentist appointment. There's this fear. I think it gets better every generation or every half generation.
I believe that.
But I mean, I just didn't feel like an adult where I could just get in my car and leave and go do the thing I needed to do and then come back.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like I was permitted to.
I believe that because I feel that I can do that now, mm-hmm. but I also, you know, I don't, you know, I've kind of made it high up, right? So I always mm-hmm. have to say to myself, do the people on my team have the same feeling? Like if somebody wants to stand up at 3:30 instead of 4 and leave because they want to go see their kid's soccer game, like mm-hmm. have I fostered an environment that helps people feel that way? Yeah. But I'm with you. I do think that it's on the individual. But you're right. People don't want to ask.
Because you don't, you're going to get replaced. You're going to get air in the back of the mind. They're going to think, oh, she's not committed.
Committed.
Oh, God.
She's not committed
to her career.
Yeah.
You're just not. And I don't know this new generation. I haven't been around them enough to know what motivates them. Mm. Of course, it's, you know, generally speaking, stereotypically, but what motivates them, what, how to incentivize them. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll find out.
But for us, it was, at least for me, it was, you know, praise and gold stars go a long way.
Oh, yeah.
It was feeling validated for good work, feeling useful. I think you just want to feel valued, that you're doing valuable work and that's noticed.
Let's go back to, you know, so I'm from a small town in West Texas, so mm-hmm. I totally know exactly what you're saying. I mean, I think East Texans have a little bit of a thicker accent, but outside of that, I totally know exactly what you're saying with all of that. I was reading that you grew up with a single mom. And so I just made this post on LinkedIn yesterday because yesterday was one of those days I was really struggling to kind of make it all happen. And I even say in the post that I don't understand how single moms do make it happen because I couldn't do it without my partner. What was it like growing up with a single mom? And how has that shaped what you decided to do with your life?
Yeah, absolutely. So we call her Saint Linda. Linda with a Y, L-Y-N-D-A. I'll back up. So I'm youngest of three.
Okay.
Raised by a single mom.
Wow.
My dad split when I was 9, but my brother was like 17. So I can't imagine how the difference, right, and how you're impacted.
Sure.
And so I usually open with that set of facts because it has been an undercurrent helping make every decision I've ever made, like in adulthood, my upbringing, where we came from and where I want to be in stopping the cycle, right? And starting a new cycle for
Absolutely.
Us. So first generation college, my mom graduated high school on a Friday, Pine Tree High School. she says, right, might not.
Oh my goodness.
Texas.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I have a couple of Coors Lights. So do I.
Oh my gosh. That's so my mom. That's so crazy.
Yeah. She says washer.
Oh my gosh, a wash rag.
There's one R. It's at the end.
Yeah, every once in a while, I'll let something slip out, and my entire family's just like,
"Yeah,
what was that? What was that?
Dadgummit!" But she graduated high school on Friday and starts at Bank Teller Training School the following Monday.
Okay,
and retired 42 years later.
Wow.
So in those 42 years, you know, she never. My second year associate bonus in big law was equal to the maximum amount of salary she made in any given year.
Wow.
She would work at Target, during Christmas season to pay for gifts before Target was Target. Yeah. It's cool now.
Yeah, right? It's cool now. Not then.
To this day, if I am ever in any kind of retail store, especially clothing store, oh my God, Alex and my daughter, if you don't refold that damn t-shirt, like there is a Linda somewhere that has to come behind you and fold that t-shirt. Gosh. You take them all out of the fitting room. It's just consideration. But,
yeah.
But just to your question, it has dictated every decision. So when I talk about imposter syndrome, when I talk about having to be a capital P partner, I had to be successful because I was not going to continue that trend. I was not going to be the owner of my own future. Yeah. She did not have the options, the choices that I had. You know, you always talk about why people stay in marriages so long. Yeah. I mean, ding, 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 it's financial.
Oh, yeah.
Like, far and away. And to the point, like, how do you do it? She didn't have a choice. She didn't have a choice. She got one child support check for $100 see, how many years was I? 9, 10 years?
Oh, my goodness.
What do? We rented a house. I remember walking the rent check next door. Landlord lived next door. We got free lunches at school or in public school. But I didn't know any different.
Yeah.
You know, need differently. Excuse me. I'm educated.
Yeah.
but I got a full ride to A&M. It's a great scholarship foundation. It's definitely need-based, merit-based for sure, but also definitely need-based.
That's great.
But she just, you know, she's not very, I think especially our parents' generation, she's just so humble, like to a fault. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, tell me, how was that? What was that like? I don't know. You just one foot in front of the other.
Yeah, you just get up and keep going. Yeah.
And her, I mean, we had domestic violence issues. We had alcoholism. I mean, just bad, right? Yeah. All bad. And she just, to this day, has never said a negative word. This is not an exaggeration. Has never said a negative word about my dad.
Really?
And has all the material too in the world, right? Oh, my goodness. Right? I think we're
now. How do you do that?
Maybe we have too many platforms to do it now.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
We could, you know, tear people apart publicly.
Yeah.
And so that's it funny. Is just, it's
that's it, true.
That motivation. And I was always an ambitious kid, I think. Yeah. You're just kind of born that way. Because I see my daughter, I see a lot of the same traits, perfectionism.
Sure.
Just a little OCD and CDO, whatever. And she has nothing. It's night and day upbringing, right? Yeah. She has nothing like that. She wants for nothing. So I don't know if you're just born with that ambition or not, but that's certainly the way we grew up and the circumstances that she had to overcome in raising those three kids on her own has just catapulted, you know, my desire to succeed.
Man, that's amazing. I do think that there's a lot to that. Cause I, you know, I've seen that my entire life, and a lot of the women never leave the town and they just become their mom. Mm-hmm. And, so yeah, I definitely think that it could be something you're born with, for sure.
There's that saying, I can't be what I can't see.
Right.
You heard that?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I don't think she saw any different.
Yeah.
And we're exposed to so many other, you know, media, movies, Boston Legal, Ally McBeal, whatever it is. We can see examples.
Yes. I'm so confused. You know, maybe this is like my own mental issues and whatever, but like you're so accepting of it. You don't harbor any resentment over her not doing anything different to make it easier on you.
I think it's turned out to be an asset. I think there was a long time when I thought about it as a detriment. So I briefly mentioned imposter syndrome, but I would be in these, I mean, the boardroom, let's say of Haynes and Boone, right? Mm-hmm. The boardroom, it's this piece of granite that, you know, costs more than, I don't know, the White House. I can't even think of anything expensive. Piece of granite on top of a table. And we would be, you know, 20 people. It's called Mall First Year Associates, and we're all together. And they're talking about stuff like crew and lacrosse. And I just assume they're making words up. I'm like, we played football. We didn't have a soccer team. Oh, like, goodness. I don't know their frame of reference. I do not know your world.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel worthy to be in this same room with them. They went to, you know, Ivy League schools. Their dads, their moms were attorneys and doctors, a lot of second gen, third generation attorneys. And I'm sitting over here first to go to college. Like, I don't feel equal to you. And so I thought of it in resentful ways, kind of what you're alluding to, not to put words in your mouth, but I thought about it as a detriment for a while until there's this great quote in Michelle Obama's book. Okay, have you read Becoming? Mm-hmm. She says, so it's a similar story. So she's at, I forget, I think she's at a law firm or maybe at school. She's in some situation where everybody around her is very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. And she starts listening to them talk. And I'm paraphrasing, but it's basically like, oh, y'all ain't that smart. Like, I am definitely smarter than you.
That's good.
And so to some degree, yeah. I started going, okay, well, definitely smarter than that guy.
Yes.
I'm definitely, my EQ is higher than hers.
Yep.
Definitely better looking than him. I'm a better public speaker than them. I'm better at whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
You go, oh, y'all aren't what I perceived you to be. You're not superior. You just grew up very differently. And I think as you go on and you kind of edge out your peers to some degree, or you're on par with these people that you perceive as so much higher than you, you go, oh, dang, I do belong here. Like, I deserve to be here just as much as they do. And when that...
Did you just solve imposter syndrome for everyone in the
good
room?
Luck. Like, you're welcome.
I mean, I think the difference between... I've done that before too, because we had a very similar upbringing. And so I will sit in rooms today and look around at the people and feel like I am not worthy to be in this room. Mm-hmm. But I do that same thing. I'll listen to them talk for a minute. I'm like, oh, I'm way smarter than that guy. But I don't think a lot of people have that ability to just be like... to like themselves enough to kind of compare them. You know, do you know what I mean?
Well, I've never had a problem with
self-confidence. Help me with the gift of gab. What am I trying to say?
I don't know, man. I just, it came out this way. I started talking at birth. But it also is a sense of confidence to feel like anybody gives a shit about what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, I did not always feel this way. I used to hate public speaking. You can ask my mentor, Laura Whitley. She still reminds me, from Haynes and Boone. We had to go through these... seminars to help you learn how to be a better public speaker. Yeah. It was a very formal series of training, and they would film you, and it was awful. It was awful. And I did it kicking and screaming because it was required, non-billable, right?
Of course.
And then go home and not sleep and do your billable work. Whatever. I'm not, I'm not resentful.
You're not resentful.
It's fine.
You're not. No.
Totally, you're totally over this. Recovered. But she'll tell you, like, this did not happen overnight. Everything, I sound, cool, calm, collected now. Maybe even competent, right? Yeah. But it's just such a work in progress.
Yeah.
Like, I would sweat. I'd sweat through all my, blazers, and I would tremble. And it's practice gives you confidence. And I think the self-awareness, like, you probably know deep down, and better than is such a bad word.
Yeah, sure.
Or bad phrase. But I am better suited for this role than that person. Mm. I am going to do a better job at recruiting than that person.
That's good.
I think when I realized that people can't talk to other people,
mm-hmm.
like, that's not, it's hard to learn it. It's hard to learn how to teach someone to be personable.
Oh, I agree.
So, we all have colleagues that we can think of.
Oh, yeah.
I just started.
I can think of myself. Well, yeah. Like, I don't have it as much as you do. Like, everybody has a different skill set. Like, when I took StrengthsFinder, Woo was my worst skill.
Yeah.
Or my worst strength. And so I have to work towards that. But yeah, I definitely know what you mean by that.
The practice will help.
Practice.
You get more confidence.
Get into it.
Yeah. I don't know. You care. You give fewer and fewer Fs about what people think as you get older.
I think,
just maturing, like it or not, it's going to happen. You're going to get older. Mm. More mature, I don't know, but you're going to get older. Hopefully wiser.
That's funny.
But yeah, that helped me overcome imposter syndrome.
Well, Erin, I just want to thank you so much for being here.
Oh,
you had
you.
So many great stories.
Thanks.
I think that this is going to be so helpful to so many women. So last thing I'm going to ask you is, what are the next projects for Diaper Concierge?
Yes. So really trying to get in Oklahoma City. If anybody knows anybody, Will Rogers, OKC. Expand. So big wins for me. The biggest win. So in the world of entrepreneurship, you have your it's like point Z, like what's the, like, at the end of it,
right?
Not ABC. Point Z for me is Disney World.
Oh,
Disney parks, Disneyland, all the Disney
Universal's
things,
coming
Universal
up.
Universal Studios. So somehow I got in front of Universal Studios, and we're talking about a pilot program.
Okay.
That's been 8 months.
Oh.
So it's all so dang slow. but that would be my ultimate get is a very prominent park like Universal or Disney. But continue along this path to have like a Southwest regional presence and really kind of take over, Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, and then now in Arkansas, then Oklahoma. And so now I've got this recreatable product or service that someone could come along and say, you never have to do law again.
Yeah.
I'd be like, thank you.
I think you're going to get there. I believe in this company. I really do. I think it's going to be great.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you. Appreciate it.